Thank you for standing by, and welcome to the Q1 2014 financial results of Sunrise Communications. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. There'll be a presentation followed by a question-and-answer session, at which time, if you wish to ask a question, you'll need to press star one on your telephone keypad. I must advise you this conference is being recorded today, Thursday, the 22nd of May, 2014. I would now like to hand the conference over to your speaker today, Mr. Uwe Schaeler. Please go ahead.
Good afternoon, and welcome to our results presentation for the first quarter of 2014. My name is Uwe Schaeler. I'm responsible for investor relations. With me on the table is Lieber von Schiener, our CEO, André Krause, CFO, and Roger Schaller from our corporate communications department. I would like to hand the call first to André to go with you through the financial numbers, and Lieber will follow on an update on marketing activities.
Yeah. Thank you, Uwe, and good afternoon from my side as well. I would like to draw your attention to the presentation that we have made available to you and would like to start with the second slide on the key messages. All in all, I would say the first quarter 2014 has been more challenging to us than what we have expected for a couple of reasons, some of them also having been good reasons. But nevertheless, if you look at the numbers, some are actually showing some negative trends. So therefore, I think explanation is quite necessary to spell out why we think it's actually underlying positive development overall of the business. So firstly, we were able to continue our postpaid customer growth and also our TV subscriber base growth. Effectively, our postpaid net additions for the quarter have been 17,000, and for the full year, for the last four quarters, 78,600, which is a growth of 6.6% year-on-year, which displays, I think, quite a good growth momentum and continued growth momentum on the postpaid net additions. Secondly, also on the TV subscriber base, here, a year-on-year growth of 32,800, a growth of 65.5%, and an addition in the quarter alone of 8,500. It's displaying also, I think, quite a good growth momentum on that TV side. If we look at the top-line development and the revenues here, then the business has been declining by 3.4%. And one key driver, as we have discussed with you every quarter recently, was the price reductions that have happened with the launch of the Swisscom Infinity product portfolio already mid-2012. Now, why this is still having an impact is we are running through a ramping, as you can imagine. We are comparing now the first quarter of 2014 with the first quarter of 2013, where in 2013, 50%-60% of our postpaid customer base has been migrated onto the lower price points, whereas now we are talking about a customer base that has been migrated to an extent of greater than 90%. So from now on, we are not expecting to see an increasing impact, but rather a declining impact, as we actually have really seen the migration happening. Nevertheless, this is, of course, in a year-on-year comparison, one key driver that has driven down the revenue development of the business, especially in the first quarter. Now, that, of course, gives also some pressure on EBITDA, but furthermore, EBITDA was additionally pressured by two other elements. The first one was, as we will talk later on about the launch of our relaunch of our MTV product portfolio, which is quite important for us as it serves within the young segment, which shows quite some dynamic. We have accelerated our marketing spendings to support that launch, and also we had some initial marketing spendings also for the launch of our Freedom portfolio, which effectively has happened in the first week of April. So that is one additional cost driver, which has pressured EBITDA. But secondly, there was also another driver, which is the amount of SACs invested into new customers has increased compared to the fourth quarter by 13%, and that has also driven some higher acquisition costs. This is actually in response to some market developments where we not see ourselves as being the driver for that, but rather being reacting on it. And we actually defended our market momentum on postpaid by spending more. Also knowing that with the launch of Freedom, we are stepping out of the traditional SEC game. So it was our last quarter of exposure to that effect. Nevertheless, if you take those two components into consideration, then the EBITDA plus the top-line effect, the EBITDA is under pressure, and that's clearly what you see. With 131 million, that is a decline of 9.9%, which is resulting from the aforementioned components. Now, lastly, if we have a quick look at the CapEx, then here we are continuing our infrastructure investments on a higher level. And here you see an increase of 41.4% compared to the year before. As we said last time, again, we are continuing to press on this as we believe that UMTS and LTE and the best blend of technologies and also spectrum allows us to provide even more improved customer experience from the network side. So that is a very important element which we will continue to invest as well. So that's the overview of the results, and as I initially said, quite some challenges, but I think overall, if you take the sum of it, the top line pressure is a continuation of a rather old effect, which should actually no decrease. And the investments that we have made in terms of SEC and also Marcom have given additional additional bottom line pressure. So that is clearly something that actually should go out of our way going forward as well. Now with that, let's have a more closer look to some of the KPIs of the business. So if you move to slide number 3, there you see the development of our mobile subscriber base and the ARPU development. So on the left-hand side, starting off, you see the growth that we have mentioned on the postpaid side with 17,000 postpaid net additions for the quarter alone. So you also see in comparison, it's quite a strong quarter. Which is also reflecting the good market momentum that we believe we have as a business overall in this segment. And on the prepaid side, again, a continuation also of the decline of that. Here, mentioning again, from our perspective, we see a lot of pre to post migration happening, customers actually stepping into postpaid increasingly and thus putting pressure on the development on the prepaid market. In terms of ARPU, you see a year-on-year reduction of almost 5 Swiss francs. A big component of that is driven by the inclusion of the Lebara business last year, which gave us more prepaid revenues and ARPUs, and thus a dilutionary effect, which is making up for 30% or 32% of the decline. The rest is actually attributable to the price reduction and the migration impact that I was referring to earlier on. Now, if you move to slide number 4, again, our pro forma prepaid subscriber statistics for market share purposes. Now looking back to the fourth quarter, you see our market share in prepaid would have been at the range of 27.7%. You also see the first quarter numbers. For the first quarter, we are still missing one competitor, so therefore we are not able to give you the market shares, but we will update on the market shares then in the same way as we are doing it today in the next quarter. With that, I'd like to draw your attention to the development of the fixed line business, which you can see on slide number 5. Starting off at the bottom of the left side of the page, you see actually the development of the TV subscriber base, which shows a continuously good development and an increase of another 8,500 customers, now reaching a level of 83,000 customers by the end of the first quarter. And I think we are really displaying that we are continuously driving that business. On the other hand side, and that is something where we said again and again, we are working on improving our product portfolio, and this is actually going to happen during summertime. So rather sooner we will see a new portfolio, which then also should give us more growth opportunities on the overall subscriber base on fixed. Nevertheless, for the first quarter, we have seen another decline of 6,000 overall. In terms of value, I think here the good part of the story is we have the continuation of the two effects. One is on the pure access. Actually, customers are striving for higher bandwidth and thus also for higher ARPUs. So we see an 8% increase on the internet-only part. And additionally, if you take into consideration the growing TV subscriber base, which adds also ARPU, then the overall ARPU is even growing by 14%. So despite of the overall customer base decline, we see a rather flattish development on the overall value contribution of fixed line, which is attributable to those positive ARPU trends that we see in this area of our business. So with that, and largely for your reference, on slide number 6, you see some more details of our P&L. The vast majority of numbers we have already commented on. I'd like to flesh out one additional element, which you actually see on the operating free cash flow and the change in working capital. We had quite a, I would say, seasonal impact and also cutoff impact at the end of the first quarter. The seasonal impact in the first quarter is driven by high capex in the fourth quarter of last year, and thus also cash outs happening in the first quarter this year. Secondly, also the first quarter, we traditionally have our bonus payouts, which also give additional pressure on the cash flow. And thirdly, then the cutoff topic. Here we have seen some receivables not coming in at the end of March, but rather slipping over to April. And April, therefore, actually has shown quite a very high positive cash flow. And we will later on use also a pro forma figure for our debt leverage ratios to give you a more reasonable picture of where the business is driving to. Effectively, we have seen another 60 million cash in happening in April. So that gives you more a sustainable view of where the business is heading. So rather a more flattish development on the operating cash flow, or even rather slightly positive. With that, some details on the CapEx numbers. As I said already, the CapEx has increased year on year by 41.4%. So you see the increase from 39 to 55 million. Again, the distribution of those investments is actually showing that the vast majority of investments is driven by our extensions that we are doing on the mobile networks. But also to a greater extent what we are investing into our fixed business, and additionally also the continuation of our IT investments and some other investments. So overall, no big change in the distribution, the vast majority flowing into our infrastructures with the biggest share attributable to our fixed network. With that, we come to the last slide of the financial presentation, which is slide 8. Here you find our net debt and leverage ratios, and we have added one column, which is the column very much to the right-hand side, which is the asterisk number 5. On this one, the delta of that column to the column in the middle is actually that we are using the cash balance at the end of April rather than the cash balance at the end of March. At the end of March, the cash balance was at 65 million, while at the end of April it was 124. So it shows the other close to 60 million of cash in happening in April. But as I explained, some of the cutoff items that actually probably gives a more reasonable picture in terms of leverage ratios. So overall, I would not say that the end of March, where you see a worsening of our leverage ratios from 3.6 times to 3.8 times, and on MCIG level of 4.7 times to 4.8 times, is actually reasonable. If you correct the effect, then we actually are rather stable on 3.7 and 4.7 times. Additional comment I would like to make, we also have repaid some of the utilized RCF, so we have done a repayment of 35 million in the first quarter, which has also driven down some of the cash pay borrowings, as you can see from the statistics. So with that, I'm handing over to Libor to give you a little bit of an update on the recent product launches we did in the first quarter.
Yes, hello. Let me just start on the page 10 and just give a quick overview of the MTV portfolio. As you know, this is a brand focused for the young segment, which we have extended to to the 30 years of age, and we have launched MTV Home, so basically new home offers with the internet and TV offering with the best price value ratio for young people in Switzerland. And we have also launched all new mobile portfolio, basically the covering everything, both entry needs up to international full flat, which includes a lot of innovative features such as WhatsApp, the speed serving and cost control and cost protection abroad. Next to the WhatsApp partnership, we also added SBB partnership, and that does generate a differentiator and adds the value for this specific customer segment. On back of that, we've actually done new broad brand campaign on MTV together with MTV, which was the first broad one in the last 3 years. And we've really driven more than 50% the share of voice based on that campaign in the targeted segment. What's important to mention is also that the freedom concept, which means decoupling handset from the service tariff, is also available for the MTV mobile portfolio. On the next page, you will just see a quick, as you know, we don't give detailed customer data out, but we still wanted to give you an insight into the changes that this launch has driven. So we have the first results, more to follow in the coming quarters, but we have really positive market reactions. We've seen that since the launch of the mobile portfolio, we've triggered 37% increase in new orders, and also contract extensions rose 22% above our normal run rate, and that's a weekly average. And second, we have continued to grow our customer base and actually grow up to 60% faster after the launch of the mobile offering. As you know, we are very keen on making sure that the customers that we have and the customers that we gain have a good NPS, and this last move has actually increased for 36 percentage points the NPS results on the MTV brand. So some good news from the first quarter on this specific market segment, giving us on a nice growth path. So this was specifically targeted for the youth segment. As you know, we have also launched on our main segment, so main brand, the Sunrise Freedom at the beginning of this quarter. We have had a good first reception from our customers, and we look forward to update you on the development on the Sunrise Freedom in our Q2 results.
Thanks, Leo. Thanks, Andre. With this, we would like to open the Q&A session, and I would like the operator to take over for the Q&A. Operator, could you please start the Q&A session?
A reminder, ladies and gentlemen, if you wish to ask a question, please press star followed by one on your telephone and wait for your name to be announced. Your first question comes from the line of Stanley Martinez. Please ask your question.
Good afternoon, everyone, and thanks for taking my question. So first, in terms of subscriber acquisition costs, should we expect that it will remain elevated at Q1 levels as you pursue the Freedom and the MTV branding concepts and continue to see high sacks from your competitors? And then likewise, in terms of the MTV impact, should we see the effects of those in the financials coming through in terms of continued reduction in out-of-bundle usage, completely offset by higher ARPU per household? I mean, how should we think about the puts and takes?
Okay, so starting off with your first one on the SEC continuation, as I referred to with the start of Freedom and actually the Freedom concept, so the decoupling of hardware and tariff is applied not only to the Sunrise tariffs but also to all MTV tariffs since beginning of April. Now, as a matter of fact, this actually leads to a substantial reduction of SEC, as actually the hardware contract as such is no longer subsidized with a service, but rather it's it transferred to an installment model, which ultimately leads to a reduction of SEC to almost zero, despite some channel commissions that we still need to continue to pay. So in that respect, the negative impact of that SEC increase we would only have seen for the first quarter. But in opposite to that, we would you need to expect a substantial reduction closer to a much lower level, actually, from the second quarter onwards.
Okay.
So that was the first one. And on the MTV, I'm not sure I got your question, really. Could you try to specify it again?
Yeah, sure. I do want to come back to the effect of the SACs and the installment plan. But just specific to MTV, you're offering, a new, effectively a new bundle, that would probably lead to some reduction in out-of-bundle usage. So how should I think about the decline in out-of-bundle usage relative to, what you're trying to manage in terms of, higher ARPU per household?
Yes. So I think at the end, you should not expect a massive reduction of ARPU from the move. So at the end, it's true we have changed some of the components of the tariffs in order to also to stay competitive and to be attractive. But also we have narrowed, let's say, the upselling opportunities. So from that end, it opens up also massive upselling opportunities for new customers, but also for existing customers migrating. So from that end, the trends that we have seen are not really value-destroying, but rather flattish in total.
Okay, great. Now, coming back to the move to more installment plan, I take your point on the working capital outflow this quarter and that there were, timing issues involved there with respect to incentive payments and, the timing of certain receivables. But going forward, should we expect that as the installment plan becomes standard in your base, that we'll see as an offset to lower SAC, just a higher working capital usage? And any advice in terms of dimensioning that I think would be well received.
Well, first of all, yes, that's true. As part of that concept, as some revenues are accelerated and cash is lagging, that leads to deterioration of working capital, so that needs to be expected. But it also will be only a temporary effect as we are expecting to find a financing, i.e. factoring solution for that. And also to the overall volume, as we said, we are not commenting on the development of this right now. I mean, remember, we are only a couple of weeks into this, and we will update you on that performance by the end of the first of the second quarter, and then probably also be able to shed some light of how we think the working capital development should be anticipated.
Okay, great. I'll go back in the queue. Thanks.
Thanks.
Your next question comes from the line of Ben Darrington. Please ask your question.
Hi, Ben Darrington, Bluecrest. Do you feel the investments for growth you've made in the first quarter make an IPO more feasible, or do you think you have to do significantly more than them to get to that stage?
No, we think actually we have reacted to some developments in the market as we were referring to. So I think we have sensibly reacted and we could uphold our momentum, which was we wanted to achieve in order to actually get a good starting position for also the new Freedom portfolio and not actually see a drop in perception. So that was the reason why we have done it, and I think we have done quite well on that. So that's how we see it.
So you don't see the first quarter results as necessarily derailing any IPO plans you may have had, even though you can't comment on it?
Nice try. Yeah. Well, look, the numbers are the numbers, and investors might actually have a look at them and try to understand it. From our perspective, we see, as I said, the Q1 from a top-line perspective is a continued development, which actually should become better now as we have gone through the pain. So we are rather in a stronger position than in a weaker position at the end of the first quarter. And the other two effects that I explained on the cost items side are kind of one-off effects, which will go away. So from that respect, we don't think it will derail our position at all.
Okay, that's great. Thank you.
Your next question comes from the line of Sebastian Reinders. Please ask your question.
Hi, good afternoon. Sebastian Reinders, ING speaking. In terms of your capital structure, what are your intentions with the high-yield bonds that you have outstanding? Are you looking to call those somewhere later this year, or what are your intentions?
Well, so far we have no intentions. As we have said again and again, if economically a movement makes sense, we potentially would look at it. At the time being, given current interest rates, we don't see that there is a very quick return to be expected. So from that perspective, we at the point in time have no intention to do anything about it.
Okay, clear. Thank you.
Thank you. Your next question comes from the line of Vivek Khanna. Please ask your question.
Hi, good afternoon, everyone. Most of my questions have been asked already. I just had two follow-ups, if I may. First of all, when it comes down to marketing cost in H2, I mean, clearly you've had some, call it one-offs or incremental in H1 related to the MTV, service rebranding, but relaunch rather. You mentioned something that's also going to happen on the fixed line. So just wondering, you know, if you could quantify, you know, what sort of incremental cost we could see in H2 relative to relative to H2 last year. And then the second point is with regards to the acquired assets, I was wondering if maybe you could tell us what the contribution to both revenues and EBITDA were in the quarter. And then a final one, if I may, you know, just looking at S&P's report, you know, it did say that they are anticipating a more stable operating performance in 2014. So I'm just wondering if you could provide a little bit more color onto that. I mean, I appreciate that your year-on-year comps from a pricing perspective is going to be easier, but I was wondering what else is there which you think would give you confidence of a more stable performance for the rest of the year, please. Thank you very much.
Okay, I try to answer your questions in the best possible way. So on Marcom, actually, please understand, we can't really talk about what our Marcom plans are in detail, because you might imagine it also might have a competitive aspect to it. Nevertheless, what I mentioned and what you should expect is there are, let's say, two more invest areas at minimum. One is actually the Freedom launch, and the other is the portfolio refresh that we are going to do on fixed line. It's not actually going to change the game substantially, but of course we want to make sure that both launches are perceived well and actually get some momentum which we can convert into growth, so we will invest in those. I won't really guide you on what the number is, because we also don't want to hint competitors on what we are intending to do here and when. Secondly, on your revenue and EBITDA, on the launches we have done in the first quarter, it's really marginal impact so far, just given the fact that those customers, the launches of those products have been happening at the end of February. So
Andreas, I was talking about the assets which you acquired last year.
Ah, okay. So on the assets that we have acquired, you're referring to Lebara and Ortel.
That's correct.
That we see a continuation of the business, more or less. Yeah. So in overall, you see the trends with what we have in prepaid, but so far our expectations are met. We have not expected that market to turn around immediately, but we see some sort of stabilization, so that's in line with our expectations. And on your S&P question, overall, I think if you look at the numbers of the business, very clearly 2013 was a year where we only started to grow the business with focus from the fourth quarter onwards again. And beforehand, we have actually done quite some internal repair, as we were also talking about in the different quarters. So we really feel that we are in a better starting position to capture some more growth in the market, and that we have started in the first quarter with MTV. We have started in the second quarter with the Freedom launch, and wireline still to come. So in this regard, we are, of course, also expecting that these launches are having a positive effect on the overall development of the business, and in particular on the customer growth side.
Thank you very much.
Our next question comes from the line of Jean-Yves Guibert. Please ask your question.
Yes, good afternoon. First, I've got a question on the, coming back to the question on the impact of Ortel and Lebara. Given the ARPU impact of 32% of the decline explained by these two, it looks like on the organic decline basis, your mobile service revenue has decreased by, again, another 10%, 10-11% year-on-year in Q1 14 versus Q1 13, which is pretty similar to the trend we've seen in Q3 and Q4. So I would like to understand your statement made in Q4 when you say that you are expecting the impact of the repricing made in 2012 to flatten out, because so far we haven't seen that in Q1. And then I would like to make sure that I understand the first sentence you put in page 2 on your presentation, as you say that you expect growth from Q2 2014. So is that a firm guidance from you that you expect your total revenue to grow in Q2, I guess on a year-on-year basis? My second question, I'm struggling to understand some of the impact you refer as to explain the EBITDA decline. So in addition to the top line reduction, you mentioned an increase in marketing expenses on the back of the launch of new products, and as well higher SACs. But this looks to somewhat contradict what you refer in your financial report, where you indicate a lower marketing expenses during the quarter, and overall a flat transmission cost and cost of goods sold on a year-on-year basis. So where is this negative impact offset by some operating efficiencies? So if you could clarify on that one. And that's it. Thank you very much.
Okay. So starting off with the last one. So here what I was referring to is the SEC invests have actually continuously declined during the course of last year as the market was actually calming down, right? So the 13% increase on SEC is referring to the level that we had on the fourth quarter, mm-hmm. firstly. And secondly, then also if you look at the Marcom, which is bundled into the total number, so overall the SEC are nevertheless a bit lower than what we have seen last year, but additionally we also have invested close to 5 million more on Marcom, which is embedded in the numbers. So in total, if you would exclude those two effects, there would have been a massive reduction like we have seen in the past quarters, and that would have also yielded a higher EBITDA development for the quarter. So that's how you need to read that one. On your second question in regards to guidance, I'm not sure I said anything like you were referring to, but that wasn't mentioned and it wasn't by no means a firm guidance. So we are anticipating that there is more customer growth to happening, and what it actually will really drive, we're going to see when we see the second quarter results, but you should not take it as a firm guidance, as we don't want to give guidance at this point in time.
So when you refer to anticipated growth from Q2 2014, you just refer to customer growth, not ARPU, obviously.
Well, I don't want to specify it to anything because I don't want to exclude that the others could actually be growing, but I don't want to actually guide you to a specific development.
Okay. And if I may, a last question on your broadband and fixed business. I'm trying to understand the rationale for the ongoing focus in the change in your broadband customer mix. Away from LLU onto a VDSL based in order to provide TV services. If I compare the your broadband ARPU in Q2 2012, so prior to the the start of shifting your customer base onto a VDSL. The ARPU was at 36. Now the blended ARPU for broadband and TV is around 8 to 9 Swiss franc higher. But that's compared with a wholesale cost, which is more than 12 Swiss franc higher that you have to pay to Swisscom. So I'm just struggling to understand for the time being the rationale, and when do you expect actually the negative marginal EBITDA impact to stabilize?
So firstly, the key driver of that development is actually customer demand, right? So what we see is that Switzerland has become a very much a TV-driven market on the fixed line side. So customers are only very seldomly making a decision that is not driven by a TV decision on top of it. So therefore, TV is very important, and it's not that we are driving specifically this development, but that's just the market demand that we see. And that's actually driving the development. So it helps us to actually keep valuable customers and to upgrade valuable customers. What is right is actually right now we actually have a TV product that requires VDSL to achieve a good quality of service. But going forward, we will also be able to provide TV services over ULL. That's going to come probably earlier next year. But on that end side, that also would give us the opportunity to leverage our ULL customer base with better economics. All in all, if you take the sum of it, right now we don't see that the development is a dilutionary one. We see it rather flattish or even slightly incremental. So from that end viewed, we are quite happy with the development of moving the customers to VDSL and also TV.
Okay. Okay, thank you very much.
Thanks.
Thank you. Your next question comes from the line of Robert Jaeger. Please ask your question.
Hi, thanks for taking the question. I was hoping you could comment on competition from MVNOs, given that Cablecom is going to be starting an MVNO offering, and if that may prolong some of the recovery that you're anticipating. And also, just going back to the last question, if you can clarify what you mean on page 2 by a return to anticipated growth from Q2 14.
Okay, so starting off with your Cablecom question. So it's true, Cablecom has recently finally launched their mobile product. If we look at it right now, it actually offers three different products. It does not include any LTE at this point in time, and there are also no flat rates available. It's firstly marketed to their own customers only, so it has not really been brought to the overall market. So what we can observe by now is that it did not have any impact on our development and of our customer intake. So on that end side, we see it rather neutral. Of course, they are a market factor that now needs to be considered, and for sure they will be able to convert some of their existing customers into mobile, for sure. The offerings have some attractiveness, but on the other hand side are not market shaking, nor being available to everybody, nor being really aggressively priced in terms of flat rates, nor even including LTE. So from that end side, it was kind of the expected defensive move that we have discussed last quarter. So it's somewhat in line with our expectations. It's far too early to say anything more than that. On the guidance question, I can only say what I said before. So this wasn't meant to be a firm guidance, and we are not intending to guide you to any specific top line or bottom line development. We do anticipate an acceleration of our customer growth, and you can make a reading of the dynamics that I have explained. So that should drive you to some conclusion.
All right. Thanks very much.
Thanks.
Our next question comes from the line of Usman Ghazi. Please ask your question.
Good afternoon, gentlemen. It's Usman Ghazi from Berenberg. I just have two remaining questions, please. The first question was just on your mobile churn rates. They just seem incredibly high versus the competition. And I know you have a bigger prepaid subscriber base, but even if I account for that, you know, even your contract churn, if I back that number out, just seems very, very high relative to Orange and to Swisscom. So I was just wondering, you know, it seems like an easy win for you if you can correct the churn issue, you know, to get some subscriber growth. And I was just wondering what, you know, if that is an area that you are looking at the moment, or what you can do to improve that, and why, if it's structurally high, why would it be high at Sunrise versus your competitors? That was my first question. And then the second question, I just wanted to get some clarification on the SAC, a comment that you made. I mean, you said that SAC would be coming down in Q2 because of these because of the fact that you're no longer bundling SAC with your tariffs and your Sunrise Freedom portfolio. However, my understanding is that the cost hasn't really changed. I mean, your price points, when inclusive of the SAC under the old tariffs, is pretty much the same as the new tariffs, except that, you know, customers now have a choice to take the SIM only. So why would SAC then be coming down in Q2 because of the new tariffs?
Okay, good. So starting off with your mobile churn question. So I don't think that we have an extraordinary high churn compared to our competition. Effectively, yes, of course, churn is always a lever to improve, and we have talked about the introduction of NPS, and we have also talked about the investments we have made in operations, so our call centers, and also in networks. So actually, we are working on the topics that could actually drive churn, plus, of course, the attractiveness of our product portfolio, which you see we are also revamping. I think we are pulling all the necessary levers to improve churn. Actually has pushed churn a bit, which is actually we have stopped the rollovers in our postpaid contracts, i.e. meaning customers that are running out of their initial contract term are not prolonged for another 12 months, but now have an opportunity. That impact is also not earth-shaking. So from that end side viewed, we are pulling the right levers to reduce churn, but I also think we are not massively higher than the others. On your second question, so that's an effect of the overall accounting treatment of the model. At the end, what is happening is in the installment model where we are doing the hardware part, actually the revenues need to be booked entirely at the beginning of the contract because the customer is making the commitment to actually pay the hardware, but the cash flows in later. And that's exactly the aforementioned net working capital effect that we have discussed. So as a matter of fact, in the past, we had the SEC, which was the difference where customers were paying the subsidy only over the contract duration. And now we actually have the revenues at the same time when we actually have the COX. So from that end, the hardware subsidy component of SEC is reduced to zero from a P&L perspective. So that is the technical effect that I was referring to.
So just on your second question, then, so the EBITDA, you don't see an EBITDA impact, but you'll see the impact is basically going to be seen in working capital.
You have an EBITDA impact, firstly, but you also have a positive impact on EBITDA,
yep.
But you have a negative impact on working capital.
Yep. And can I just have a follow-up on your churn question? I mean, you know, I just looked at your report. You're saying that your churn is 11.6% for the first 3 months of the year, blended postpaid and prepaid. I mean, Swisscom has a 12% churn for the entire 12 months, right? And then Orange has a churn that's, you know, that's not that you know, out of line with Swisscom. So I'm trying to understand why you think that your churn rates are not higher relative to your competition. I mean, is there a different definition of churn that you have or something?
No, we don't have we have a different definition of prepaid, right, which has an impact on prepaid churn. So that's the reason why we're giving a pro forma statement on the market shares, because pro forma our prepaid development as a 12-month customer definition. So customers being active within the last 12 months.
Mm-hmm.
On our churn figures, we are using a 3-month definition, which actually is much more aggressive, and therefore you actually have more in and outs, which you actually see in the churn figures. So we think it displays the valuable customer base in a better way, but the market standard, if you want, is more 12 months. So that's why I think if we then strip out the postpaid development that was I was referring to, we are pretty much in line with what we see in the market.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you. you. Our next question comes from the line of Alexander Grün. Please ask your question.
Good afternoon. A question. You mentioned already factoring facilities as a way to increase liquidity. The question I have on the capital structure, how do you think about the rest of your capital structure, the PIK toggles in particular? Any plan B here? Obviously, the high yield market seems receptive for issuance. Is it something you're thinking about, or are you happy with the existing shape?
As I said previously, we are currently happy with the existing shape. Of course, we are viewing the markets, but we also are interested in if we want to do anything, it needs to yield a good return. And yes, the markets are offering some better opportunities, but nevertheless, the short-term returns are not as attractive to us. So at this point in time, we have no concrete plans to do anything about it.
Thank you.
Thank you. Our next question comes from the line of Vivek Khanna. Please ask your question.
Hi, good afternoon. Sorry, just a quick follow-up. I was just wondering if you could give us a little bit of color on CapEx spend. Clearly, you know, seasonal, you know, year, on looking at it on a year-on-year basis for a quarter in itself may or may not be representative. So I was just wondering if you could give us some color as to where you think full-year spend would be and maybe a little bit more color as to where any increase is going, if any at all. Thank you very much.
No, I don't want to comment on the CapEx volume for the full year. I think the comments that we have given all the time is that we will continue our infrastructure investments to actually keep up to competition, and we will decide alongside the year what is required and what helps us to actually continue a strong network position within Switzerland, and that's the key area that we are looking at. But for that particular reason, I don't want to guide you to any specific number.
But can we say that it'll be around the range of last year or not, and 2013 and not 2012? Is that fair to say?
No, I don't want to guide you to any specific number.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you. Our next question comes from the line of Jahanzeb Hassan. Please ask your question.
Hi, guys. Thanks for hosting the call. A couple of questions. I think if I recall, you gave us organic growth for the group in Q3 and Q4. I was wondering if you could give us the same growth rates for Q1 of 2014. And then I had a couple of follow-ups once we go through that, please.
I mean, the organic growth, we have decided not to show that any longer because we have also restructured the way how we address the ethnic market in Switzerland. So we have acquired Lebaro and Ortel, and we combined actually that business with our own brand Yellow, which we have developed ourselves for that specific segment. And all of those three different brands are now marketed and distributed together. So therefore, it becomes very difficult to strip out the organic growth. In general, I think you can expect, as Andre said earlier, similar trading levels as seen last year for the so-called inorganic part, but in general it will become more and more difficult as we would also need to allocate cost and personnel and distribution cost to those different elements, and therefore it becomes more and more difficult.
I understand the cost side may become difficult, but the revenue side as well, even just the revenues would be very helpful.
I mean, even the revenues become different because what we use the different brands now for really targeted segments within that ethnic market.
Okay.
Because when we acquired them, we already said that Lebara, Yellow, and Ortel, they are in different ethnic channels present. Even the distribution channels are different. So we are streamlining more the brands now into the specifics of those segments, and therefore it becomes more and more difficult. And we also have certain decisions, which then makes it very difficult to compare them as standalone entities.
Okay. Then on to churn. The increase from 9.5% to 11.6%, I imagine a large part of that is due to the increase in the prepaid base. So can you, as you've sort of implied to us that one-third of the ARPU difference was because of the increase in prepaid through M&A, can you give us some color on the impact on churn from the acquisitions?
No, because we don't report those churns individually, and also within the prepaid and postpaid, we don't report them individually.
Okay. Is it so? Then, and then lastly, is it fair to think that, you know, in Q3 of 2013 that you'll be comping to clean revenue and ARPU numbers, where, you know, you'll have arguably 95%+ of your backbook repriced, and we'll have lapped the acquisition of Ortel and Lebara. Is that a fair understanding of Q3?
Did you say 13 or 14?
Q3 14. We'll have a clean comp. Is what I'm asking.
Yeah, that you should expect.
Okay, great. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Your next question comes from the line of Stanley Martinez. Please ask your question.
Thanks. So in the 2 quarters since Sunrise acquired Ortel and Lebara, you've lost 62,000 prepaid subs. And I understand that you're not using these distribution channels to drive prepaid to postpaid migration. So first, have I misunderstood not the numbers, but the strategy on prepaid to postpaid migration? And then turning to, you know, the line in slide 2, which I understand is not revenue guidance, would you at least expect that prepaid net adds to be less negative than what we've seen in the most recent 2 quarters, looking into Q2 and Q3?
Okay, so let me try to, not sure I understood exactly what you meant about the pre-post strategy, but in general, if you look at prepaid markets across Europe, then you see that prepaid markets are in decline for a couple of reasons. And one reason is that historically there was a good reason to actually go into prepaid, and right now there are more reasons to actually go into postpaid. So that's why prepaid customers are moving over to postpaid. Now, we of course are understanding the bigger foothold that we have now through the acquisition of Lebara and Ortel to actually connect to those prepaid customers earlier, and thus also using that as a channel for our postpaid customer growth. So that's what it is. But as a matter of fact, that churn is actually a customer choice churn. So it's not that actually the prepaid markets overall are growing and others are winning and to our expense, but overall the market is shrinking because of that phenomenon. So we try to actually leverage that, of course, to see prepaid as a channel to postpaid, and of course having the right campaigns and vehicles in place to actually drive postpaid growth from the prepaid customer bases. And on your second question on the prepaid development, as I said, I don't want to give you really a specific guidance for the second quarter. All in all, this trend of decline is probably here to stay because the general prepaid markets are in decline. Of course, we try to operate as much as good as we can within those, but the general trend is at current the trend that we need to live with.
Okay. Thanks, Andre.
Thanks.
Right. There are currently no further questions. Please continue.
Yeah. As there are no further questions, I would like to close the call here. Thank you for your participation, and we speak to you latest in for the Q2 results. Thanks a lot.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
That does conclude our conference for today. You may all now disconnect.